surviving by iPhone, volunteering nurses, out-of-state nursing licenses, and we're going to take a look at upper respiratory infections. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. We have a lot going on in this week's episode. A lot has happened in the last week or so. Everybody's been paying attention to the news. We've had earthquakes. We've had all kinds of strange happenings in my area, a cobra bite of all things in Maryland. So it's kind of unusual times going on around us, but we're going to be talking about nursing, and nursing encompasses all areas of our lives, even the strange and unusual ones. So we'll be touching on some of those things today. I want to especially welcome any new listeners to the show. We always get a lot of new listeners each and every week, and I want to make sure that you check out the follow-up information and links provided in the show notes for this episode over at nursingshow.com. Everything I talk about in our tip segment and our news items, additional resources for follow-up are all available in the show notes linked for you so that you can check out everything I talk about, look deeper into the stories, and follow up more on the tip information. And that's just the way we do things here. So you can find more of things over at the site. Also, nursingshow.com is your resource to use the links to subscribe by iTunes to get the show for free or by the Zune Marketplace. You can also sign up for the Nursing Show newsletter while you're there. I want to also remind you, you can get in touch with me by sending me emails. Send those emails in to comments@nursingshow.com. And if you have any questions or comments, we'll try to get back to you right away and share them with our listeners on occasion. So if you have a link for a news story or a topic you'd like to see covered in a future episode, just send those on in. And that includes any of you nursing students out there. I love to hear from you. And if you've got a topic area you'd like me to do a review for, well, guess what? All the people that are already graduated and working in the nursing field probably could use a review as well. So I'll cover all that here on The Nursing Show. Time now for this week's news, and I'll lead off this week's story with an item from Haiti. In fact, all of our items have in some way to do with the recent earthquake in Haiti, but the first one I found really is near and dear to my heart as a podcaster, and that is a story I found at CNN.com looking at an individual who was feeling blood streaming from his head and leg after being trapped under the rubble following the earthquake, and he wondered what he was going to do about all this bleeding, and then he remembered. Guess what? He had an app for that. On his iPhone, he was there, and he just pulled that iPhone out, and it was information from the American Heart Association with first aid and CPR information on his iPhone. There's lots of great apps like that, and he was able to follow the information there to provide some basic first aid for himself, stop the bleeding, and he was able to bandage his leg. He was able to stop the bleeding in his leg and his head and wait patiently, probably not too patiently, for some people to come and dig him out of the rubble. And so this is just an indication that there are many, many different ways. We talk about telenursing. We talk about nursing resources. I provide services as a nurse journalist. There are many ways we can touch people's lives as nurses, and we shouldn't discount, perhaps, even more importantly, as things progress in technology, nurse software designers. I know that sounds strange, but I think that there are some really exciting things that we as nurses can do to reach people in ways that they're going to be interested in our material and our information. And certainly interactive games or interactive software programs on a mobile device would be a great way for you or your facility or your community health services to reach out to the community and provide good, high-quality healthcare information. So I'm excited about this story because it's proof that there's a lot of good information out there and people are finding good, high-quality health information and using it. But as nurses and healthcare professionals of all levels, we need to definitely provide a better push for giving people a location for those resources and to help them find those resources. So even if you don't design software, you can certainly look at what's out there and recommend or talk about the different resources and how to evaluate and decide if a resource is high quality or not. Moving along to our next story, there's a story about a Florida nurse who is volunteering in Haiti and going back soon to volunteer again. Emergency room nurse Glenn Wambi was recently in Port-au-Prince following the earthquake and was planning a second journey there to provide additional services to that community. And, you know, it's one of those things that I think is just what we do, right? And whether it's volunteering or going off as part of an aid mission, this is something that calls to us. And certainly, the broad scope of nursing care is needed following a huge natural disaster like this. We need a focus not only on treating immediate injuries and problems, but we also need to focus on the longer-term issues associated with any type of break in our modern services. Now, we know Haiti isn't a modern country in our sense of the United States, but there are things that are provided by the government or provided by local services such as electricity, clean water, and those things are disrupted during an emergency. And it takes a highly trained healthcare professional at various levels to come in there and help teach people how to safely treat their water so they can drink it, how to protect themselves from disease that may crop up following a situation like this. And so that long-term health care, that community health approach, that public health approach is right up a nurse's alley. And so it's great to hear about Glenn going down there and he's providing those services. But it's something that all of us can think about. Even if we're not going to Haiti or some other damaged area, all of us have disasters of a natural sort that could happen in our region, whether it's a blizzard or a hurricane or an earthquake or a wildfire, whatever that might be, flooding. Anything that disrupts local services is going to require an increased response from healthcare professionals to maintain community health following the event. And I think that this is a great opportunity for all of us to review what we have in our region, what our facilities provide, and what we would have to do to provide services to our communities, to our families. Are you prepared for a disaster? So these are all things to consider, and I think it's a good opportunity to think about those things. Finally, our last story is a look at Governor Crist in Florida responding to the fact that many nurses are responding to Haiti is feeding more nursing shortage problems to Florida. Now, they've already have nursing shortage problems in Florida, and this has just heightened that problem as nurses are responding to that disaster area for a period of time, 30 to 60 days in some cases. And when that happens, what do you do to fill the void? Well, one of the things that Governor Crist has done is sign an executive order to temporarily allow nurses with out-of-state nursing licenses to come in and provide care in the state of Florida for a limited time. I think it's 90 days under this system, and he can extend that if there is a need. And this is one of those things that kind of is interesting to me because as far as I know, nurses are trained to a standard level of minimum training, at least, to pass their nursing boards. But what about maintaining our licenses? Are our state licenses really that different from state to state that this is something that is of concern? Or is this just one of those things that states are trying to maintain some autonomy in licensing within their state, as they're supposed to do, and that in times of emergency it can be set aside? Or should we push for more reciprocity agreements between states? Some states don't have any reciprocity agreements. Other states have reciprocity with every state around them. And what does your location do? What do you think about this? Do you think that there should be more mobility between states for nurses? Anybody out there, a travel nurse that wants to chime in on how they handle this when they move from facility to facility as a travel nurse, what kind of challenges you run into? I'd love to hear back from you. Definitely send me in those emails to comments@nursingshow.com, or you can leave a comment right below this particular article on the website. There's a comments link right at the top, and it'll take you down to the bottom, and you can leave a comment right there. So lots of different ways to chime in and share your responses with the Nursing Show community. So this week's tip of the week is a review of upper respiratory infections. What are we talking about with assessing the upper airway and upper airway disorders? Well, first of all, we need to focus on our ABCs, and that means, first of all, patency of our airway. And this includes the nasal passages, the oral passage, and the oropharynx, the posterior oropharynx, or the throat. And we need to monitor and make sure that we're asking the patient if they can breathe clearly, if they feel like it's closing. These are all questions you have to ask, and then assess, do you hear any wheezing, high-pitched sounds or signs of an upper respiratory obstruction? And so you want to listen for those audible high-pitched sounds from the upper airway. We want to assess how much mucus they're producing and draining from their nasal passages, or draining back into their throat. Also assess for blood in the airway. Anything that causes that inflammation or drying of the mucus membranes in the nasal passages could be draining back into the throat and down into either the GI tract, or worse yet, into the lower airways. And of course, blood in the lungs is very caustic, so this is something we need to watch for. We want to know, are they feeling like their throat is dry, their mouth is dry, cotton mouth associated with the dry environmental conditions. So we want to know their moisture level in their airway. And are they having difficulty with swallowing or talking associated with this dryness? That's something we can remedy and make sure they're getting plenty of fluids. We want to also make sure we don't miss out on our regular external assessment procedures. Vital signs are very important. Patients with an upper respiratory infection could develop a lower respiratory infection, and it could become severe quickly. So you need to monitor them carefully, assessing their skin color, look for signs of shock, essentially, and assessing their lung sounds regularly, especially if they're in your facility for other problems and they develop this infection, or they come in and have developed the infection. We need to very carefully monitor them, because if they're laying in bed a lot because they're recovering from another problem, this could rapidly progress to a lower airway or a pulmonary issue. Some of the infections and disorders. Well, first off, the common cold. My pet peeve, it's a virus, folks. And we all know that, I know. But we need to, again, focus on education as one of our nursing goals this year in 2010. Educating our patients and the public around us about good medical information. And one of those things is not overusing antibiotics. I see it all the time. Prescribers, just to make a patient feel better and so that they stop bugging them, will prescribe an antibiotic after the patient pushes them to give them something, rather than hold off and resist. And you know, patients don't understand. Patients take that antibiotic, they go home, 2 or 3 days, they feel a little bit better. Well, are they feeling better because of the antibiotic, or are they feeling better because they were sick for 3 or 4 days, they came in to see their doctor, they got their antibiotic, 3 or 4 days later, the virus has run its course, they're feeling better because the virus has been fought off. We need to make sure we are educating our patients. Common cold symptoms, I probably don't need to tell you, nasal congestion, sore throat, cough, usually doesn't accompany, isn't accompanied by a fever, or if it is, it's a low-grade fever, and it's very infectious. In fact, you're infected well before you actually know you have a cold. So prevention is the key, and good hand-washing techniques we'll talk about later. Sinusitis and rhinitis, and some of these other itises we're going to look at, can be illnesses in their own right, but most often they're signs and symptoms associated with another infection. And so they go hand in hand with other issues and are caused by other things. Sinusitis can be acute or chronic. It's just an inflammation of the sinuses, and it causes congestion. The sinus passages, the lining, it gets inflamed. This is an enclosed space in your skull, so as that lining is inflamed, it reduces the ability to drain. If you're dehydrated, the mucus is thicker, and it gets plugged up, and now you've got an enclosed space producing mucus, increased pressure, and you've got a sinus headache. Again, hydration is really important because we want to make sure that everything's as thin as possible, and that will help unplug some of those sinuses. Chronic is defined more than 8 weeks in adult or more than 2 weeks in a child. So if you chronic sinusitis, those are the dates that I've found. Rhinitis is an inflammation of the nasal mucous membranes. And, you know, this is a common symptom of the cold and a lot of viruses, but it's also an symptom for a lot of things. So not just infection, but allergies, seasonal allergies, weather. Dry atmosphere can cause your nose to drain a lot of mucus. So you get a sore throat in the wintertime when you fall asleep because a lot of that drains down the back of your throat, and that drainage irritates the back of your throat, causing you to have pharyngitis, which we'll get to on the next page. Again, teach people to blow their nose gently, not to irritate it, or they end up with a nosebleed because of the irritated mucous membranes. This too can cause headaches as that drainage gets hauled backwards. And again, teach them to blow their nose and get it out of there and then drink more fluids rather than snorking it back up inside. So we need to make sure we're educating our patients. Pharyngitis is that inflammation of the throat, the pharynx. It can also be acute or chronic. Usually when this is present in its own right without any other concomitant symptoms, can be related to strep. Strep throat is pharyngitis. It's a common cause. So be aware of that. This could be needing antibiotics. So assess for that. Most places I've been to now and most insurances are allowing for rapid strep testing in the office. And so I've seen that happen more and more frequently. It can also be related to regular irritants. A patient's workplace has maybe some chemical irritants in the air. Smoking, patients who use their voices a lot can have problems with this, podcasters included. Tonsillitis and adenoiditis is related to the tonsils and the adenoids. They're part of the lymphatic system, and they can become pockets of infection and harbor some infection. They don't drain themselves adequately. People with enlarged tonsils often have them removed because they just become infected and cause airway obstruction. And this can be related to strep as well. Sore throat, fever, snoring respirations, especially when they're sleeping. This is not necessarily sleep apnea, folks. It is related to the anatomy of the airway. And if that is inflamed, it's going to be more likely that causes those snoring respirations. They can have difficulty swallowing as well, both due to the pain and due to the size of the tonsils. Earache is associated with this because of the placement of the tonsils and the adenoids in relation to the eustachian tubes leading up to the ears. And frequent colds and bronchitis can be associated with chronic tonsillitis or adenoiditis. Laryngitis, inflammation of the larynx, also known as aphonia, the loss of the voice. And my son gets this every time he goes to a football game. He goes to a game, he yells and screams and cheers, comes home, he doesn't have his voice for 2 days, which in the case of a 16-year-old is kind of nice sometimes. However, we should be aware that what can cause this. It can be related to irritants in the atmosphere, related to workplace, related to smoking. Again, overuse of the voice is the most common cause. It can also be related to upper respiratory infection, although what I've read seems to point to most likely a viral cause, and so not a cause for concern. But should be aware and treat this and most of these things with palliative care. So again, treatment is palliative. We're not going to cure most of these problems. They're going to resolve on their own because most of this is viral or related to conditions in the environment. However, we should be aware some of them can need antibiotics, and those that do, we should be monitoring carefully. First off, anything, we need to make sure we're maintaining a patent airway. We need to humidify the atmosphere for the patient and help humidify the airways and make sure they're getting adequate fluids. So we just need to keep them comfortable. Maybe some over-the-counter medications for treatment of symptoms like a headache or a sore throat or to help dry up secretions. We may need to give them something to help them sleep if they have a persistent cough. And again, humidified the air, either using a humidifier in the home is great to recommend. Just make sure they're using it responsibly. Those filters often get overused and they become a source of ongoing respiratory problems because they harbor some spores and infection that grow in there. And so we need to make sure that they're using them properly. And any patient that's on O2, consider humidified oxygen to assist with moisturizing and humidifying their airways. Help them rest their voices. If they're going to need to speak quietly, make sure you have the environment quiet so they don't have to raise their voice or speak up to be heard, and listen carefully when you're in there. Promote prevention. This is the big deal because so much of this is viral, related to the common cold. We need to teach patients to wash their hands. If you have a patient that comes in with an upper respiratory infection and you don't at the very least hand them something that reminds them to wash their hands more frequently and more in a better manner, then you have missed the boat. We really need to educate. So much can be helped just by keeping patients from getting these illnesses, and prevention is key. Also, a lot of people use their home remedies, something their grandmother or their mother or whatever was taught, and some of them are related to their cultural background. So you need to ask questions, how have you been treating this, so that you can get a good assessment. And when you find out what it is, most of them are comfort measures, and so they are perfectly safe, but you should find out what they're doing. And finally, just cough drops, throat lozenges to help help the patient soothe their throat and generate some saliva, and they can be helpful. One real quick thing, trauma, epistaxis, bloody nose, whatever you want to say. This can be caused not just by trauma, but it can be related to some of these other illnesses, and I wanted to point that out. It can be exacerbated or contributing factors with low humidity. Again, rhinitis, anything that's causing an inflation of the nasal passages, medications such as blood thinners, and also infections that are causing some of these other issues. Treatment. Initially, direct pressure and maintain it for 5 to 10 minutes. I don't know anybody that has a patient that does that the first time you ask them to. They hold it there for 2 or 3 minutes tops, and then they check to see if it stopped yet. And then they put the pressure back on. Well, every time they let go, it blows out the clots and it starts all over again. So we need to make sure that they're maintaining direct pressure, sitting upright with their head forward, so that we don't have any of this blood draining into the back of the pharynx and potentially either down into the GI tract where it's going to cause nausea and potentially vomiting, or also for patients that are stroke patients or have difficulty swallowing effectively down into their upper airways where that blood can be very damaging. Eventually, if it doesn't stop, they may need further measures, including packing them with gauze. Sometimes I've heard of using a balloon catheter, sticking it up in there and inflating it to apply direct pressure at the location of the bleed rather than from the outside. And cauterization may be necessary if it just won't stop. Patients can become anxious. A little bit of blood looks like a lot of blood to patients. So you need to support them emotionally. Make sure that you're dealing with their anxiety, both them and their family members, especially for elderly patients on blood thinners. They just are so afraid every time they prick their finger that they're going to bleed to death. And you know, we monitor them carefully. If they're getting their labs done and we're monitoring them, we shouldn't have an issue, but we certainly should address these concerns. And finally, make sure you're reassessing airway patency frequently. I can't keep coming back to that enough. And teach prevention. Gentle nose blowing rather than forceful nose blowing. And avoid digital trauma or however else you can talk to your patients about picking their nose. And I got to tell you, I think I get this more with adults than with kids, I swear. I think it's just more common. So definitely want to make sure you're having that talk if necessary. Don't forget to follow up on the links in the show notes for additional resources. Remember, I can only cover things generally here. There's a lot more you can find out there, and I always try to provide you two or three good follow-up links that can give you a good piece of follow-up information on a variety of topics associated with today's tip of the week. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind everybody that you need to check back in for the show notes for everything discussed in this episode. All of the news items, tip files, and other links mentioned are all available in the show notes for this and every other episode. And you need to follow up on the information because I can provide only general information here. It's your job to follow the links and look at the resources and see how they apply to your own scope of practice. I'll do my job here and get you as much information as I can. It's your job to follow up, make sure that the information gels with what you know and what you're supposed to be doing in your area. I'd like to urge all of you to comment and get back in touch with me here at The Nursing Show. You can reach me, of course, by leaving comments over at nursingshow.com. There are comment links at the bottom or near the top of every single article. You can also reach me by email, comments@nursingshow.com. And you can also get a hold of me over at Facebook, facebook.com/podmedic, or you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/podmedic. Time to wrap up this week's episode with PodSafe Music, again from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This is, again, an artist we've played before, I think a song we've played before. This is Carrie Cunningham and her song, The Single Life. If you like what you hear, you'll find a link in the show notes for Carrie's website, as well as a link to go ahead and pick up her song over at iTunes. You know, spending $1, $1.29, whatever it is, to pick up one of these artists' songs is a great way to thank them for sharing their music here on podcasts like The Nursing Show. And I urge you to show that support. That's it for me. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I'll be back again next week, every Friday, with another episode of The Nursing Show. And in the meantime, make sure you stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care. Three times a day, half the time on TV.